Greetings, everyone. Welcome back. Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, our 76th episode. That means in something like, I don't know, 6 months, we're going to hit our 100th episode, which is just crazy to me. This was this little experiment I tried about 2.5 years ago now to bring people together on Fridays to just talk about leadership, practices, technology, collaboration that digital transformation leaders face in their day-to-day jobs. And here we are, 76 or so weeks later, talking about agile innovation and cultivating high-performance teams. So I'm super excited for this conversation. Thank you for joining us. We're just going to give everybody a few seconds to join us. Liz, thanks you for joining. Uday, I have an intro to make for you that will come a little bit later today. I've just been catching up. It's just been one of these weeks that I've been pedaling at maybe 11 miles per hour, and I need to be going 13 or 14 miles per hour. So it's just been a little bit of a busy week for me to keep up with some of the collaboration. But Uday, I'll get back to you on some of the things you asked for. Jeanette, I'm sorry we missed each other this week. We're going to have to find another time to meet up. Kato, it's good to see you. I have an intro I'll be making for you coming up, something that I think you'll find interesting. Bradley, it's good to see you. Heather, we are due for a meetup. It's been a little bit of a while. And I want to welcome everybody to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We're talking today about agile innovation and cultivating high performance teams. I moderated a panel around this a few weeks ago at our local SIM chapter here in Fairfield, Westchester. I had an all-star group of panelists, and our panel lasted about 90 minutes. And I, if you can believe it or not, I did very little speaking at it to Joe, to my witness. There was just so many good ideas coming from three just really excellent panelists from different industries about cultivating high performance teams. I am getting an article around this out. I don't know if it'll be on my blog, Star CIO blog, or if I will get this up on the CIO.com website, but it'll be up there in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So this will be a way for us to share and collaborate around this. If you have an idea or a question, I have found a way to monitor the chat channel. So I am on the comment stream here on this page. So if you have a question or a thought and don't want to come up on stage, you can leave it in the comments. I'll try to bring it up. If you do want to come up on stage, do raise your hand to speak. But I'm going to hand the floor over to Joe first. Joe is at the event this week. And Joe, the event, it was a few weeks ago. Joe, I'm just, you know, your vision, your view of what a high performance team looks like today. I'm going to ask Joanne and John after that. But Joe, jump in here first, since you were at the event and had the benefit of listening into everybody's wisdom. But what do you think is a high performance team look like today?
Well, there are a lot of key elements to making a team a team. The bandwagon I always climb on first is, of course, communication. Strong communication among the members and between the team and the leadership. Clear and concise understanding of the mission. What is it all about? Why are we here? What are we doing? Things change. And so the ability to pivot, to adapt to changing circumstances certainly plays a key role. There's a lot of discussion about diversity, you know, different perspectives. And, you know, I like people, I've said this before, I like people that have a high degree of drive, initiative, interest in what they're doing. You can't buy that. You can't teach that. It's inherent in some people that they just want to solve problems. And having people like that on the team will outweigh technical savvy every day of the week, in my view.
So Joe, you're starting with, you know, set them up from the success from the top down. They need to know their vision, what they're really charged for. You need to form a diverse team. You got to have communication and collaboration channels there so that they can be successful. Joanne, where are you going to go from there? Sorry, Joe.
I was just going to say, when all else fails, try the fries.
Joanne, welcome to the floor again.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe. I think today we have to look at the team as what does a team look like in the age of Gen AI? And so I'm not necessarily going down the rabbit hole of Gen AI, but rather to say that the not only the makeup of the team, but some of the traits of the team need to be slightly different. They have to have ethical consideration and responsibility. They have to be strategic decision-making units. And I say that because a high-performance team not only needs to excel at strategic decision-making, but that the insights that it uses, which could be generated by AI, need to be aligned with long-term goals, need to be verified and validated, and they have to have a leadership vision for that AI integration or cobotics integration, because the world of technology is changing so quickly that innovation can come from any number of vectors. And so they have to have the adaptability and the lifelong learning, but mostly they have to be strategic in their decision making.
Yeah, Joanne, I definitely think that AI is a game changer for high performance teams. I like the way you brought in responsibility and bias and, you know, our discussion from last week into this. I think that is a new responsibility for high performance teams. But, you know, when you talk to groups and, you know, use the word agile in there and you talk about innovation, you know, a lot of the first things that comes to mind to people is like, do I have the right skills on my team to do the work that's in front of us? And, you know, I think AI is a little bit of a game changer around that, because, you know, now we're getting a lot of capabilities from AI and other technologies. A lot of technologies have become more simplified and more accessible. And so I think it's, you know, the team's got to be able to ask the right questions and look at the challenge and the problem statement objectively and collaborate that well. Going back to Joe's point, I think that means being able to look at a problem from different angles. And that's why I think diversity on teams is so much more important today than even 3 or 4 years ago. But let's jump onto the AI question in a little bit. I want to get John in on here. John, you know, high performance teams, I mean, you're doing a lot of client facing work. So if you fail in that topic, in that area, your clients are going to feel it. So how do you look at making sure you have the right team focused on the right problem working with your clients?
Yeah, that is the challenge in consulting. It's as much, I would say, theater as it is really kind of results sometimes. And the power of a team is when you really get everyone kind of going in the same direction. And then back to that part, like in the services world, like a lot of times, like to field a project, you sometimes have the people that you have, right? And so that, like, the most important thing is like, how can the people on the team cover for each other's deficiencies? Sometimes you have somebody that's super technically smart, but maybe not the best at presenting and or communicating. And so sometimes you have the people that are really good at communicating, kind of front-ending some of the really great thoughts of some of the people that may have a harder time expressing their thoughts on something. So just like, to me, like the most important thing on a team is like how people cover for each other, how they complement each other with the strengths that they have, and then they cover for the weaknesses of each other.
Are getting a good list here. I'm going to chime in with two of the things that I'm always looking for. Number one, are they really practicing agile cultures and mindsets? Are they coming in and having a discussion about how to solve problems, which problems to focus on, but then actually making a commitment to each other that they're going to get the work done in the length of their sprint? and then being able to celebrate what they've accomplished and retrospect about how they can improve things at the end of their sprints. I think, you know, when I see teams that are really high performance, I see them really building up that muscle capability and following those practices. And then the other thing I'm looking for, are they learning? Are they learning every sprint, every release? Are they taking self-improvement and team improvement to heart about how they're operating? But are they also, you know, committing to experiments and trying to figure out how to take something that is aspirational and break it down into a set of experiments, a set of learning areas of POCs that can, you know, enable them to do more things and more efficiently. So two things I'm always looking for: how agile are they in terms of mindset, and to what extent are they putting learning at the forefront of what they're doing? Go ahead, Joe.
I want to build on that a little bit, Isaac, because I agree with you that the team has to be learning, but the team lead, the digital trailblazer, if you will, should be a coach and mentor, and should be encouraging people to experiment and try new things and be willing to accept alternative paths and different, you know, different ways of approaching things. So I think that's a two-way street. If you're looking for people that have a desire to learn, but you don't allow them or afford them the opportunity or encourage them, I think you're doing it a disservice.
Go ahead, John.
And I think right now, like on any project that I've been on, which is using kind of new technology, and this goes back 20 years, it's like you're doing a project on technology that people aren't experts on. They may be some of the best people on the field, or some people have used this technology as much as anyone else. But since it's such new technology, the learning aspects is critical. So like having people that are comfortable, you know, trying to do a project on new technology, comfortable learning while they're on a project. Yeah, completely agree. Absolutely critical.
I think, you know, part of that, I mean, I'm just thinking about two of the videos that I recorded on my channel, the Driving Digital Standup, the two most popular videos: what is the role of the agile delivery lead and what is the role of the team lead? And, you know, both of those play critical functions in being able to drive high performance. Go ahead, Joanne.
I think leadership within the team is very important, but I also think that leadership from the top down, or the influence of the business leadership or even technology leadership to the agile team, is getting even more critical, because as technology is changing so rapidly and we're seeing, you know, the renaissance of the robot, we're seeing Gen AI come in, we're looking at all sorts of new tools, that leadership vision becomes even more important to really connect the dots for the agile innovator, for the team member, to really understand why we're doing what we're doing. And that's becoming even more critical now than it has been in the past.
Yeah, Joanne, just dovetailing off of that, you know, everybody who's been here on the coffee hour knows I have a vision statement template. And the story behind that is just working with a client a number of years ago and meeting some of the teams, understanding what they're working on, looking at their backlogs and asking really simple questions, or what I thought were really simple questions. You know, what are you trying to accomplish? Who's the end customer? What value are you bringing to them? And not getting really good answers around that, you know, really getting into, we're trying to solve this technical problem right now type of answers. And I said, well, group needs to pull up and get together better, and creating some space around that. Go ahead, Joanne, you're off. And John, I would love to talk about safe space. So, yeah, jump in on here afterward.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the vision statement is still valid today as it was, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. I think what's changing in the vision statement is two things. One, companies, as they've been through some form of digital transformation, even if they're early days, they've by osmosis, learned about what's been successful or not successful in their industry, in other companies, in their, you know, in people's experiences. Now they're beginning to realize that to project yourself or your company 2 years into the future is not easy, but the more of that that you can actually put down on paper, we're trying to grow, we're trying to be more efficient, we're trying to strike our version of balance between efficiency and growth, they're starting to look at a more finite definition of what that vision statement is, which helps them align vision to execution in a much more sound and logical way.
Thanks, Joanne. John wants to bring in another nuance to this. John, I'll let you introduce it.
And so when I think about high-performing teams, there's a tech side, there's a leadership side, and then there's also like what is the kind of like the nature of the team, the culture of the team, and so much of the work that we do on IT and tech projects where we're building something can be a lot of stress, and I think like there's like some things that you can do that make everyone's life better, like if you can make a really safe space for people for like trying things out, making mistakes, you know, missing delivery deadlines. Sometimes when things are going bad, you just don't know how good the people you know that you're working with are. And a lot of times when you're working on technology projects, like no one on the team's ever used this technology before. Sometimes no one in the industry has used this technology before. So it's really hard to estimate like how long something's going to take, or it's really like sometimes the technology doesn't work right because it's new. And so like, it's really hard for people to know like how to get the technology to work without doing experimenting. And so if you're able to make a safe space for people so that they can do their absolute best, but know that they won't get in trouble or punished or yelled at if they don't meet like the expectations that may or may not be, you know, realistic, it makes everyone's life better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's another side of that coin when you introduce safe space and stress. I'm moderating a panel next week, and I think he's the ex-CISO of the CIA is going to be on this panel. And one of the things I think about, you know, talk about high performance teams, I think also about security and SOC teams that are responding to a security incident and the stress that they have to go through to, you know, identify the cause and resolve issues and capture the forensics and then go back to teams and say, look, we need to change what we're doing over here. We've exposed a vulnerability. And being able to give them that safe space to be able to speak and work in a stressless environment while they're under pressure and then come back with their recommendations. I think it's, you know, security, I think, is a good, you know, peace of mind when you're thinking about that. But I also think about innovation teams, and I think about those development teams that are always being asked to do more. You know, how many more features can you squeeze into this release? You know, it's sometimes just not the right answer and not the right approach. Sometimes it's better to say, you know, let's give the team some space and room to learn how to implement something better or to choose the right solution or technology to focus on. And, you know, let the team drive the velocity rather than the demand drive the velocity. Heather, I want you to jump into the conversation. We're talking today about your view of high performance teams. What do you want to share with us today, Heather?
I think it's great that we talk about personalities and giving people the freedom, the safety to experiment, to give rise to their ideas. But we also want to make sure that people check their egos at the door, because too many times people like to take credit for other people's work. This is a group effort usually, and everyone should be able to praise and extol the virtues of what someone else offered without taking all the glory.
Heather, how do you think about this? This is something I get questions a lot from my HR leaders who are thinking about performance management. And, so performance management usually done or at an org level and then maybe at a department level and maybe at an individual level. Now we're taking that individual, putting them on a team and saying to that individual, you know, we need to work as a team, collaborate as a team, succeed as a team. And now this individual is concerned about their, you know, how they're perceived from a performance perspective and what they should do to make sure that they're recognized for their efforts. You know, how do you think about team versus individual when we put performance management into the equation?
I think a lot of it has to do with the I and the we statements, that people who say I've done this and I've done that are generally not team players. And they will be evaluated as such. And I think it was Joanne that said, or someone on the panel, about from the top down. If you talk about how we're going to work together, and that, yes, there are team members, and there will be individual contributions. If you talk about, like, this was a great, if the senior leader or the CISA, whoever, says, well, this was a great project, what I think is, you know, everything that we've been able to accomplish, X, Y, and Z, was going great. I'd like to have a specific call out, shout out to so and so. Then it shows that this, from the top right down along the shop floor, if you will, everyone knows that, okay, I have the opportunity to be singled out and praised for what I've contributed, but I am part of the greater good. So you want to be able to show that very early on and frequently.
Shihari, I'm trying to bring you up on stage, but I'm having a mechanical difficulty with the UI, so just hang in there. I think that's part of it. I think that part of it is that, you know, what I tell individuals is focus on learning. That's something that you have to do individually. When I think about performance management of a team, I'm thinking about, you know, vision down, are they executing and delivering value as a team? And then I'm thinking about what the team is doing for learning, but then what is the individual doing to improve their skills, to, you know, to continue to support what capabilities the team needs to excel at. So that's where I really focus on when I think about individual performance. I'm wondering, anyone here, you know, how do you gauge team performance? What are some of the metrics you're using? What are some of the things that you're looking for when you have six or seven teams? Anyone want to chime in here? Who's someone just went off? Go ahead, Joanne. You want me to try to get Shrihari up here again?
Sure. Go ahead. I think the metrics that are used in manufacturing really bring a good example to the idea of agile innovation and agile teams, because if your metrics are tangible, like you've contributed value to the organization by solving a root cause problem in manufacturing or on the manufacturing line, people can see the result. It's either more goods are produced or customers are happier or you sell more. Striking the balance between efficiency and growth, however, is very difficult. But generally speaking, the measures of the teams are tied to an actual cost reduction or a revenue increase or a sales increase. Those are the kinds of metrics that really bode well for agile teams, because it shows the team and the rest of the organization that something real has happened. It's not buried in the infrastructure. It's not buried, you know, in a business unit where you can't actually publicize it or talk about it throughout the organization, and then make it a bigger team effort. Call out those people who are responsible for a feature or benefit in a piece of software. Call out those in the broader arena, but call out everyone in the organization for being a contributor to that tangible value. I think those are the ones that are the best.
Hey, yeah.
Hi, Shrihari. Welcome to the floor. You can comment on Joanne's comments there, or just give us your question or thoughts on cultivating high performance teams. Welcome to the floor.
Thank you. Hope clear. My audio is clear, right? Yeah.
It is. You're good.
Yeah. Thank you. So let's talk about here. I want to add something here. The performance, right? Performance is, you know, is yearly wise, say. So you have to split the performance and into the bigger to smaller events, then look into the performance. There is a specific measurement for the performance saying that. So leader has to align the business goal, There's a business goal is our performance pillar, okay? Then team has to adopt the technology. So leader has to align the business to team technology. Then they are able to align the goals very easily. Then they are able to deliver it. So, right. That's what I want to add here about performance point of view. Yeah, please go ahead.
I think that's right, Srihari. I mean, you know, too often I think leaders are look at team performance over, you know, a few weeks, you know, whether they delivered something over a quarter, whether they responded to an issue and restored an operational issue reliably. I mean, the last thing that the team did is what people tend to talk about. And so I think teams have to take that into context and say, well, how do we respond to that? You know, my approach around this is I asked teams to think in terms of features. And features to me are, you know, a single deliverable of business value. So, and it could be anything. It could be fixing a technical debt. It could be improving an operational issue, could be running an ad campaign, something that you know that is being described as business value. I want them to keep track of what features they're delivering and then keep track of, you know, 3-6 months after that. If Martin was here on stage with us, he'd remind us that change management, that value does take time to materialize. So you got to be able to keep that list of what you're delivering today and then look at it in that 3-6-12 month horizon after that and say, you know, here's the outcomes. Here are the outcomes that they drove. Go ahead, John.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, if you're not doing monthly, quarterly, yearly business reviews, it's really hard for people to really have a holistic look at the value that people provide. And so it's easy, especially if they're a high performing team that just hums along, you know, requests come in, they deliver them, value goes out. And it's like people would obviously, like, I've actually heard people say for amazing teams, like, well, what are they doing? What value are they providing? And they didn't fail at delivering value. They provided massive value. They did everything possible that people asked, but they really failed at communicating the value. And that's how, like, that team fell down.
Joe, that's a tee up for you, but I'm going to get you after the break. And the question I'm going to be asking everybody is the role of digital trailblazers, building high performance teams and handling the tough challenges that arise in digital transformation initiatives. And John, you went into one earlier around creating a safe space for them. But, you know, I want to talk about angry detractors. I want to talk about releases that miss their deadline, about operational issues that impact the timeline. The things the managers do to make sure that the teams can be successful, what are they, and what are some tips for digital trailblazers to basically defend the team and make sure that there's, you know, that they have the space and room to be successful. So we'll cover that after the break. I want to thank all of you for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. We meet every week at 11 a.m. Eastern Time to talk about different issues and opportunities for those of us leading digital transformation initiatives in our organizations. Today, we're talking about cultivating high-performance teams, and I'm excited. I'm going to share with you now the next month's episodes. This is tentatively all blocked in, but it should look something like this. On May 3rd next week, we'll be talking about developer experience, selecting tools, and deciding between either strict standards on one end or self-organizing chaos on the other end. This is coming off of a conversation John and I had last week. He knew I was working on an article around this, and we both agreed this would be an interesting conversation to have, you know, the difference between a startup mentality and maybe old enterprise school, and how do we come to a happy medium. May 10th, this was something that we also discussed as a group on May 10th, coming into the Mother's Day weekend, we're going to celebrate moms in tech and talk about ideas on transforming the workplace. We will also have a Father's Day episode come June, but I'm really excited to be talking about this on May 10th, celebrating moms in tech, ideas on transforming the workplace. May 17th, AI era transformation, how Gen AI transforms how we teach and learn. This actually came up during one of our previous episodes, so I knew I wanted to cover it. May 23rd, I'm having some special guests. We'll be talking about accelerating transformation, winning with data science. Winning with Data Science is a great book by Howard Friedman and his partner Akshay, and they will be our special guests, the two authors of the book, to answer our questions. How do we create great data science customers? Those are the product owners and managers that we're working with to deliver great data science experiments that deliver value. That'll be the 23rd. And then May 31st, this was an episode that Joanne had suggested. We'll be talking about shaping tomorrow. The humanoid robots are coming. Where are they coming? What industries? What are they delivering? How to partner with the robots. So I'm excited to have those as our next five episodes in May. You'll see that come up in the list. If you join my newsletter, starcio.com/coffee, you'll get that full list sent to you. My newsletter comes out next week. You'll be able to get that next week. The vision statement template that I mentioned earlier, you'll get access to that if you sign up for the newsletter. So thank you for joining that. Going back to this topic of cultivating high performance teams, again, my question for everybody in the group is the role of the digital trailblazer. And digital trailblazers are typically involved overseeing and working with multiple teams, larger objectives, making releases toward them, longer term visions, really trying to transform the organization, dealing with change management issues, dealing with team issues and personnel issues. Joe, I'm going to bring you back to the floor again. What are some of the tough issues that digital trailblazers are going to face when cultivating high performance teams, and what is your advice to them?
Number one on my hit parade is managing expectations. If the expectations are unrealistic or unachievable, it's incumbent on you to make sure that you're pushing that message up or across and adjusting the expectations to be more in line with what's realistic, you know, given the resources or the size of the challenge. Change management is the other thing that I think you mentioned that comes high on my list. People have to be ready for the change. They have to be open to the change. It doesn't matter if your high-performance team is performing at absolute maximum rate if the user community just basically rejects any changes in direction or in process. So those are probably my top two.
Heather, role of the digital trailblazer and handling the tough issues that come up on teams. Heather, you're either need to, yes. There you go.
Sorry. You know, I think it's always, it's not unique to digital trailblazers. People have to be authentic. People have to make contributions that are relevant. People have to feel that they're valued, that they can communicate what they want, that is, that they want to convey, and that they're contributions are recognized. So I think it's all about feeling that you're part of it. And, you know, again, saying it comes from the top. If everyone is out for themselves, nothing will get accomplished.
Liz, I'm trying to bring you up. It's not letting me for some reason. I'll keep trying. John, how do you handle tough issues that come up on teams?
They do come up, and it really kind of depends on what kind of situation it is. You know, I always find, like, broadly speaking with the team, like, if you can get everyone to play nicely, have a set of rules on how people interact, and then when we start having issues, if you can, you know, start by, you know, if it's a, you know, can you address it in private on, you know, what we need to do, how we need to interact as a team, and just try to do everything we can so that people are partnering really nicely with each other is the first thing I do. And then, like, you know, taking stress out, making sure that there's, like, coordination across the teams to you know, lower friction. I loved how Joe said that, like, you know, getting the expectations for things, like, you know, if the team has the wrong expectations from the start on it, that creates so much stress and everything, which causes a whole bunch of other problems. So,
Jason, welcome to the floor. I'm glad you spoke up. Love to hear about your ideas on cultivating high performance teams, your question or your ideas of how to handle difficult situations that come up on teams. So floor is yours, Jason. Welcome to the group. Jason, I could tell you're off mute, but we cannot hear you. We're not sure why. Jason? Well, you're off mute on the LinkedIn app, but we cannot hear you. It might be a mic issue. Joanne, you want to jump in?
Sure. I think, first of all, you know, my go-to tool is always chocolate. It does make a big difference in terms of taking the stress levels down and the tense situation. But really, I think handling objections, you have to look at the root cause. And the root cause could be that, you know, someone in a business unit has put a bug in someone else's ear in the team, and they've now decided to champion that cause. And I think you really have to be careful that look to find where is the objection or where is the difficulty actually stemming from, and not so much try and nip it in the bud as much as make everyone aware that this is an issue for one person that may also be an issue for many others who are afraid to voice their opinion. So it's a root cause analysis kind of situation. It can be difficult. In some cases, you want to give people the opportunity of, yes, this is a safe space and my door is always open, but also to be careful to really evaluate the comment that they may be getting from outside the team as to what the motivation for it is, what's driving it, and how it can be addressed in a way that's mutually beneficial for everyone. In Joe's terms, communicate, 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 true, but also communicate by managing up and managing down and managing horizontally through the organization.
Thank you, Joanne. Jason, are you there? We still cannot hear Jason. He did leave a comment on the page and a book recommendation of a book called Herding Tigers, Be the Leader That Creative People Need. He left a link there and there. And he says, in addition to all the good perspectives shared today, having the right people in the correct place to succeed. Also, if you have someone on the team that isn't contributing or is detriment to the team culture, make the right decision to preserve the team culture. Jason, I picked that off of your comment. I'm not sure why we're having difficulty with your sound. And Liz, my apologies to you. I don't know why we can't bring you up. If you do have a comment you want to share with us, just leave it in the comments or just message me. Srihari, I'm wondering, in your role, how do you handle difficult situations that come up on teams? If you want to contribute, just go off mute. Joe, any other thoughts on this? Or we'll jump into the question around AI.
Go ahead, Joe. I'll go back to one of my tough decisions in my career. I had my finger on the trigger for way too long. And to echo something that Jason said in his comment, at some point you really have to recognize that there's a team member that isn't a member of the team. There's a team member that is perhaps a cancer and is not only holding things back, but it is in fact, you know, creating issues among other team members. And there are few ways to deal with that when it gets to a point where nothing works. You have to make that hard choice.
And Joe, like, how do you tell the difference? Like, I don't remember this conversation. How do you tell the difference between a new person joining a high performance team that's worked together for some time together, that knows how to play on the field together, knows where everybody's moving, knows everybody's skill set. New person is learning the business, the product, and the technology. And, you know, the difference between them not really inviting them into the group and giving them space to learn versus someone who was just placed on the wrong team with the wrong problem.
Heather's probably more qualified to answer that, but from my perspective, you just need to have your eyes open, look at people's exchanges, both in front of and behind other people's backs. You know, the whispers, the emails, who's copied, who's not copied. There are a lot of telltale signs that show you the group is either accepting or rejecting someone. And similarly, where I was remiss and not really paying attention to all the signals, the group was very forthright. And I guess they perhaps elected a member of the group to come forward and tell me outright, this guy is no good. We need to get rid of him. And that's what happened.
Go ahead, John.
And I was going to say, like, if you're going to be in a group, like, you need everyone to kind of play nice and you need everyone to play their role. Sometimes what I found is that people actually don't spend the time to tell everyone what their roles are, what their expectations are. And so it's like, if people can't read your mind, and so it's like, people aren't going to be set up for success if you don't set up your roles, your expectations, and what, you know, like how we're supposed to interact with each other. And so, like, if you start that foundation, and then if you watch that people aren't meeting your expectations, and then that to me is starts to be like, hey, you know, we need this person to play this role. Like, these are expectations for what they do. And if they're not doing it, then you have actually something to measure them against for what they're not doing. Two of the things I found, one is for a new person coming on, if you don't have any onboarding materials, like, some people just aren't set up for success because it doesn't matter how smart that person on, they're coming on to some place without any enablement activities, and you could have an Einstein there that just wouldn't be set up for success. And then I think the other issue that can happen is that it's like, if you have somebody that's so critical that maybe is overloaded, sometimes a team only goes to the speed of that person. And so it's like, now we have somebody that's playing multiple roles, but like, that person's causing harm because they're doing too much stuff and maybe overloaded. And so it's like, how do I take the responsibilities of this one critical function and break what this person's doing up into multiple people, multiple roles, so that we can have everyone play the role that they're really intended to be doing.
Thank you, John, for that. I'm going to jump in on Jason's recommendation on books. I just finished a book by Val Rees. It's called Chief Inspiration Officer, and it's 100% about turning around team culture and what it takes to create teams that are inspiring and that inspire others. And, you know, it handles a situation where somebody isn't a good member of the team and how to evaluate that. But gosh, this book is just full of great advice. I'm trying to get Val to potentially be a guest on our sessions one day to share some of her advice around that. For those of you particularly working on marketing and sales teams, I know we're covering a lot of sort of innovation, data, technology teams here, but she actually writes this book from a sales department perspective and running sales teams. If you want a deeper dive into what it takes to cultivate great sales teams, great marketing teams, highly recommend that book, Chief Inspiration Officer by Val Rees. Always a lot of good advice to go seek out people for advice around this. So let's jump into our last topic. Joanne introduced this, so maybe we'll give her the floor first. I do think AI has been a game changer. I do think we have to think about things differently, much like I think the pandemic and working with teams virtually was a game changer. Joanne, you have a new initiative. You're trying to pick out the best team that will be able to work on this together. When you get past, you know, filling the right skill sets, what are you looking for in this AI generation of remote and distributed teams? How are you thinking about putting teams together?
Well, in addition to the ethical considerations and the responsibility of making sure any kind of AI would be ethical, you also need to look at things like, how will this integrate into existing workflows? How are you going to bring these tools to the user community in your organization in a way that doesn't take process redesign that just had been done for digital transformation, for example, and now work a new set of tools in it into that workflow that can really alleviate some of those steps. So I look for people who have a vision for AI integration that look at resilience and risk management, as I mentioned earlier, but also those that are very customer-centric in their approach, because high-performance teams are steadfastly focused on customer need, regardless of whether it's internal customers or external customers. And they're going to start using this AI tool set, whether it's generative AI or another kind of AI, to really enhance the experience of their customer. So internal to the organization, it's not necessarily just using a chatbot to get rid of tickets out of IT for help functions. It's also using the generative AI tools or mixed reality tools with AI to help your organization learn. Like, one of the biggest issues that's come up as GenAI has come to the forefront is in team environments, you have people who are fluent in the technology, those who are just learning the technology, those who are terrified of the technology, but it's coming to the point of making everyone comfortable that their workflow and their workload will be greatly enhanced by using these tools. And then taking that and extrapolating it to solving a business issue, and many of those are very customer centric. Do I want to improve the quality of my product in manufacturing? Do I want to deliver more product faster to improve time to value, regardless of what the industry is? All of these kinds of considerations. So I look for people who are very creative and see bigger pictures, because they're the ones that are going to find the best use cases to help the organization strike the ever critical balance between operational efficiency and growth.
Joanne, thank you for that. Joe, before I give you the mic, something Joanne said aligns with a comment that Liz left to me. Liz tried to get up on stage. She says, you know, two things that leaders have to do is, number one, ensure teams are encouraged to undercommit. Nothing brings success like success. That's a key role there. And then number two goes back to something you had said earlier, Joe, praise publicly and coach privately. This is going back to how you're communicating as a team. Joe, your thoughts on cultivating high performance teams in this Gen AI remote work, hybrid work environment?
Building a little bit more on what Joanne was just talking about, one has to be careful that the team understands this is not a panacea. This is not the be-all, end-all solution to all of our problems. Glory, hallelujah. We're going to be high performance now with less effort. I mean, that can happen, but we have to keep the expectations within realistic boundaries. And security, quality of data, all of the considerations we've talked about on prior calls, these are things that have to remain top of mind in order for the team to really gain the value and gain the efficiencies without tripping over all these issues that we know and love about generative AI.
Thanks, Joe. Heather, I'm hoping we can bring you back into this conversation. I think you know that in, chapter 8 of Digital Trailblazer, I wrestle with the notion of how to build my leadership team and how to find the right balance. Joanne was just describing some of the things I look for. You know, I need, you know, some folks who are highly visionary. I need some folks who are more customer oriented. I need somebody else who maybe is going to bring risk to the equation. So, when you're walking in and you're trying to find the right people to fit on a leadership team, what are some of the things that you're looking for there? You're on mute. I'm hoping you can, there you go.
One of the things that I like is having somebody with a fresh eye. I think all too often we have people that are from the same industry, from the same, you know, maybe a crony, someone who recommended someone and, you know, they're a supporter. But when you bring someone in, I'm working on a project right now on supply chain, and you can bring people from, you know, cocoa and food and coffee and pharmaceuticals. Each of these people bring a different perspective, and that's what you really need on your leadership team. You can't have the same old. You can't have people that are yes ma'ams and yes sirs. You need people that will challenge the status quo kindly and appropriately, but being able to have that fresh vision and possibly, you know, bring something to light that no one has thought of before.
Excellent. Jason just pinged me again. He has a nice long comment here on the common stream. He called it Camelot and everyone sat at the round table. I'm not going to read the whole comment here. You can go to the common stream here. Interesting. And then he talks about another book recommendation, The Ideal Team Player, that he leaves a link in there for. Looks like Liz added the link to Chief Inspiration Officer to the common stream. So if you're looking for help about cultivating high performance teams, you got four books, two from Jason, two from me, the book Chief Inspiration Officer, my book, Digital Trailblazer, on how to cultivate high performance teams. I think we're leaving some things out of the conversation when it comes to helping teams handle conflict. And we lost Srihari. This was a question I was going to ask him. So if you're still here and you want to jump in again, raise your hand to come up. You know, I talk about this in Digital Trailblazers. It's not just an architectural issue. It's the driver versus risk equation. I talk about cultivating a team that is used to having collegial debate, that there isn't a right answer to things, that if there's too much agreement on a team, that I sense that I need to put somebody on the team to shake it up a little bit. How do we foster collegial debate? How do we then find ways to drive answers? How do we put people on a team that are going to challenge each other? Looking for some thoughts on this as we close out. John, I'm going to go back to you. Great. I was hoping you'd raise your hand on this one.
So I would say this has been, like, the challenge of this has really went up with COVID. Like, when I used to be on teams building stuff, like, we would, like, all be on the same room, and then we'd have offices, and then we'd want to collaborate more. So then we'd, like, get a big conference room. So then all of us would be in a big conference room, like, solving problems. And then, like, you know, it really changed. Like, with COVID, like, you started building teams, like, internationally, globally, you know, and even if we wanted to work together, like, we all had to be remote because of COVID. And so like, having people have interactions can be really, really hard. Like, they get to the point where, like, we're really pushing people to just, like, start scheduling time to talk to other people at work. And we're like, actually having our leaders just, like, make a hit list of people to start calling on Fridays and other days, just, like, forcing interactions, and so that, like, people start building relationships. And then we figure out where we can have boondoggles, and we fly people in together so they can meet each other at, like, conferences or trainings or workshops, and just so that people can have a relationship outside of so that when they hit their first conflict, that they actually get to know each other, and they have a little more trust, and so they could maybe give the other person the benefit of the doubt. But you have to really force conversations to happen in this new world that we're in.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think John has hit the nail on the head. There are societal factors coming out of COVID that have changed the social skills that our youth of today lack. And future trailblazers really need to be aware that they are going to have a yeoman's job to get people to learn how to interact in social settings, how to form relationships, how to develop trust in one another. I mean, these are very, very difficult times that we're living in with the up and coming workforce. So I think John hit the nail on the head. COVID has changed. It's not just the work from home. It's the societal impact that it had on the way in which people no longer mingle with each other and no longer form relationships outside of the Zoom window.
Thanks, Joe. Joanne, before you jump in here, there's a comment in here from AJ that aligns with this. Provide clear guidelines about the approach before engaging any team member for the project. I call that setting some standards. That's the topic that we're going to introduce next week about, you know, where teams should be self-organizing, where there should be standards. But, you know, along with John's question, I mean, you have to prompt the team to go out and plan. And say, look, I need you to get together and think about this problem statement from a number of different angles. I want to know 4 or 5 different ideas around it. I want to understand the team's trade-offs. You really have to be that concrete talking to teams and saying this is something you want from them. Go ahead, Joanne.
You know, it harkens the dialogue, and especially John and Joe's points, bring me back to Six Sigma days and learning that teams norm, storm, and then perform. And I think part of what got lost in COVID and then even just mobile devices being the way they are with a younger generation, your phone is not your best friend. Ozempic is not the cure for everything, and neither is Gen AI. But the point that I'm trying to make is that the norming part is not necessarily, to your point, Isaac, a standard, but it's just a skill. It's a life skill that people have lost. Whether it's older workers in our conversations, it's just easier to throw a text at somebody than it is to pick up the phone and take time in the day when we don't really have the time, even though we want to talk to them. Messaging does, you know, a good job of picking up some of that slack, no pun intended. But this norm, storm, and perform, the one part of the storm that's been taken out is that the collegial dialogue and the debate that you were referring to seems to have totally evaporated. It's either politicized or weaponized. And I think somehow or another, and I'm hoping that, you know, a standard format will bring some of this back, you can't actually engage in those. And I think it's a bit of wishful thinking to think that teams will actually engage in that kind of a dialogue or debate without there being repercussions. There always seem to be these days. And I think we have to be really careful that as we go down this path of re-engaging in society, that we take the life lessons that we learned or draw on things like continuous improvement or Six Sigma and use their formats for building those teams. It's a great framework. What's old is new. But by that same token, I think it also gives us the opportunity to start looking at future forward things like AI and how we're going to integrate those and robotics and cobotics into our teams in a very successful way.
Joanne, I think that's sort of the perfect closure to this conversation. It's really why I wanted to have it, is that we are in this divide going from the old world of how we used to collaborate to kind of this unfuture world where there's a lot of sensitivities. There's a ton more tools out there than we've ever had for collaborating. But we have, as Joe pointed out, a generation coming into the workforce, that's never experienced collaboration the way we did before a pandemic. And to John's point earlier, you know, there's a lot of fear of saying the wrong thing the wrong way and what the repercussions around that are. And for us as leaders, how do we create safe spaces? How do we give teams the time to excel? And this is essentially why I thought it was so important for us to talk about cultivating high performance teams, because if you're a digital trailblazer, you cannot take this for granted. This is not something that put people on a JIRA board and say you're working on a project and given a vision statement and expect them to know how to work together because you've given them tooling and given them a mission. You have a role to cultivate that conversation, that debate, and that place to create safe environments for them to work through solutions without feeling constant pressure to deliver. So that's why we had this conversation today. I hope everybody took value from it. I want to thank everybody who listened in. I want to thank several people who commented today. Jason, Liz, AJ, Kit. I try to bring those comments in. Liz and Jason, sorry we couldn't find a way to fix some technical problems. I will tell you, I've been on some other audio events. It is a LinkedIn issue with some of the technicalities here. So I apologize for that. And hopefully we can get you up at a future episode. Next week, we'll be talking about developer experience selecting tools, the difference between strict standards and self-organizing chaos. May 10th, we're going to celebrate moms in technology, ideas on transforming the workplace. I honestly hope I'm saying the least around this. I'd love to be just a listener and getting every mom's idea about how the workplace has to change to make it more favorable. And we will do a dad's version of this come June. May 17th, AI era transformation, how Gen AI transforms how we teach and learn. I think that's particularly important for anybody in the higher ed education fields, but also important for all of us who subscribe to lifelong learning. The 23rd, I'll have two authors joining me from the book Winning with Data Science. We'll be talking about how to cultivate product owners who can interface with our data science team. So that'll be the 23rd. And then Joanne introduced this topic, the humanoid robots are coming, shaping tomorrow. That will be our discussion on the 31st. Please come to the episodes that you'd like to. I've left you some links in the chat in terms of my last two articles. I have an article around a summary of our discussion around developing relationship with board directors. And then my post this week on InfoWorld was about 7 really innovative use cases around low code. Joanne, if you haven't seen that, a couple of those are in manufacturing. So do see that article that I did in InfoWorld. And I left you a few links. Go to the starcio.com/coffee to get access to my vision statement, to get access to my newsletter, and to read more about my book, Digital Trailblazer, along with the 3 other book recommendations that we left in the comments. Thank you, Joanne, John, Heather, Srihari, for joining up me on stage. Thanks you again to Jason, Liz, AJ, and Kit for all the comments on the comment stream. Everybody have a great weekend. See you here next week for the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers.